From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by...
A very good Sunday morning, everyone, and welcome to Loose on the Lead. I suppose it's a little less loose because there's only one of us. Much like Brian Nadeau soldiers forth in Handicapper's Report, we're going to at least start the show. Just me. Actually, luckily, there's a co-host. It's Ramon Dominguez. And so if we had to replace Seth with somebody... Replacing him with Ramon Dominguez is a outstanding choice. Ramon, good morning.
Good morning. Late jockey change here in the studio.
It's a good pickup mount, actually, for Capital OTB. Seth, I think, is going to join us probably at the midway point. We're going to have Dave O'Rourke later this morning. Right now, though, we've got a bunch of things to do with Ramon, and we've got a bunch of things to cover as we, you know, give a quick review of the past 72 hours and look ahead. But Ramon, the first order of business is to talk about the champions talk tomorrow. And I'm just looking because I've got the one that was scheduled for August 11th as opposed to the one for tomorrow, July 19th. And this should be a terrific, terrific event with a number of headliners. And talk a little bit about the chaplaincy's champions talk tomorrow.
Sure. So August 11th, what you have there is because that's the day that Capital OTB as well as TVG will be actually airing this. But tomorrow is the actual recording. So a lot of people, including myself, are very much looking forward to interacting with these amazing jockeys and hearing crazy stories as well. So, we are going to have Richard Migliori, Angel Cordero, Jorge Velasquez, and Chris McCarron, four of the best. So, yes, that will be here at Fasic Tipton in Saratoga, and people can still buy tickets at rtcany.org. And we so far have had quite a few people who have purchased tickets and very much interested and looking forward, because after the recording alone will be amazing, but then afterwards, there will be a cocktail hour where people can interact with these guys.
Really nice. And I want you to also, we talk about it on the radio, and I have Chaplain Humberto Chavez and have had Nick Karras typically a few times during the summer. You know, the work that goes on, the chaplaincy, and I am so impressed just how dedicated, Ramon, the everybody involved. I mean, talk a little bit, you know, since even before your retirement, talk about what the chaplaincy means to the backstretch and to really everybody on the racetrack.
Certainly. Well, like you say, even before my retirement, I was already involved and got to learn more about the chaplaincy and how instrumental, how important they are for the horse racing community all over the country, but I'm directly involved with the one here in New York, and it's something that, of course, there is it's a big family, the backstretch families, and so many people, and the racetrack chaplaincy is here to really serve and support the backbone of our sport. So it is great to see people like Humberto, Nick Karras, Terry Finley, who is now the chairman of the chaplaincy. He is incredible. He works so hard and has amazing ideas. And throughout this last year, despite the challenges that COVID brought along, we were very pleased to see the response that we have from people who really came on board and tried to support and help the backstretch. So it's something that is not even an option anymore. I realize that it's an extremely important component of our sport that supports our backstretch in so many different ways. So yes, I'm happy to be involved.
I had the real privilege, must have been 2005, 2005, 2006, of meeting Salty Roberts. And Salty Roberts essentially founded the racetrack chaplaincy and began something of a proselytizing nature anyway, having to do with his own life. And as remarkable a person on the racetrack as there's ever been. And Salty must have passed, it's got to be 2 or 3 years ago by now, but it leaves a legacy of, you know, of gracious, supportive work that is on every backstretch in the country. And it's really encouraging, frankly, the humanity involved with the children. I mean, obviously here in New York with Anna House and the new facility across the street, we're familiar. But there's the Backside Learning Center at Churchill, daycare facilities across the country. There's so much that whether it's drug and alcohol counseling, whether it's education, whether it's helping backstretch employees find the path to citizenship. I mean, there's so much that goes on, and I can never, do enough to try to promote what the chaplaincy is doing. And here in New York, RTCANY, and we hope that people, if you have no plans for tomorrow, to take advantage and to get a chance to meet, greet, listen to Angel, Chris McCarron, Mig, Georgie Velasquez, and Lafitte Pinkai Jr. A rare assembly, actually, of the five of them. You'll be there, and Sharon, and of course Tom Durkin, who's going to moderate the whole thing. And it should be a pretty special evening. So tomorrow at the Humphrey Finney Pavilion across the street. Ramon, while we've got you here, we're not going to fail to take the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about racing at large. And I think we've got to look at the Haskell from yesterday, because not to take away from what's going on right here on on Saratoga's race course, but there's a, I won't even call it a controversy, there's just a very spirited discussion, given the crop rules in New Jersey, about how it may or may not have affected the outcome and the disqualification of Hot Rod Charlie. I guess we'll watch it from the start. But first of all, Ramon, to your way of thinking, what is it like for a jockey who's learned how to ride using a crop to now put it away and to essentially have it in their hand if they choose to? They don't have to ride with one in New Jersey. But if they have it in their hand, how do you relearn your riding technique?
Well, that is one part. However, we as human, we can adapt, we can relearn different things. So I wouldn't make too much emphasis on the fact that, hey, I have ridden my whole life with a riding crop. It is really the importance of this tool for the safety of the sport. And I will not say that yesterday, in my opinion, and I will expand when we get to the point, the riding crop had any role in this incident, but there are countless of moments where certainly safety can be increased or maintained with the riding crop. And a lot of the times, or most of the times, are cases where it's really invisible to the naked eye. It's something just that you as a jockey, you can sense and you can avoid a situation and you can foresee and try to be proactive. And the other part is, I believe that it keeps a level playing field, because all of the horses can give their best. When we watched this race yesterday, in my opinion, you cannot really appreciate it so well from this angle, but Mandaloon on the inside goes from the rail, couple spots out, so that right then and there takes away the room of Midnight Bourbon. Of course, Hot Rod Charlie is coming from the outside with a big rush. And as he's going by in his mind, I mean, Fabien Pratt is just really focused on Mandaloon, and Mandaloon is focused on Hot Rod Charlie. So, however, when Hot Rod Charlie is going by Midnight Bourbon, it's something that, because he's coming from the outside, you don't even see him out of the corner of your eye. And by no means I'm trying to justify or trying to make an excuse for Flavien Prat. It's unfortunately human error, things that happen. The one thing, though, that I would say is that I was a little surprised that Paco López didn't foresee that, hey, there is no room, because by then he knew already Mandalun had come out.
So Mandalun definitely came out.
Came out, yeah. So he didn't have any room to play with, but he now sees Hadra Charlie coming. So I would have thought that he would have taken a whole...
Straight back, just full back.
But not only that, Steve, he failed to take a hole, but as Hadra Charlie is right about to cross his path, he's actually trying to cross heels. He went to take a hole to cross heels. So I think that he was fully unaware of how close he was. And of course, we know what happened afterwards.
Let me ask you a question on this. And you're the second person, Rich Migliori also. I talked to Mig last night. Mig had the same thought. Again, not to diminish that Flavien, you know, Kate was coming in, and listen, the horses, when they get that to that point, their tendency is anyway to move toward the rail. But the factor that Paco actually was trying to jump out to the right at the same time, or you know, maybe with the hope that he was going to re-rally, that contributes. And frankly, Paco's whole riding style contributes. He on the turn, if you get a chance to watch again, you know, he's looking inside, he's looking under his arm, and just ride. Stop with those histrionics. It does nothing. So I think that contributed. But I got to ask you, and we have it if we want to, I don't know if Brian's got it to show. The thing I thought of, knowing that you were going to be here, was better talk now in that 2004 turf. It's somewhat similar, right?
Correct, yes. Yes, the inside that day was coming out some. And certainly, Veretok now was out. Yes, here we have it. Drifting in. In that case, I actually have a little bit of a hard time pulling my crop through, but I was able to.
You're mid pack, right? The yes. White cap and the dark jersey, sitting about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 right now.
Yes.
Here we go.
When Power Scout made his move here, I actually went to take a hole and say, okay, this is a little too fast. But yes, as we get to that point, I certainly talk, because I didn't think about it. There were certainly a little bit of similarities between that race and what happened yesterday.
Well, and everybody will see it happen in mid-stretch, but this is you circling, and this was a slowish pace and your judgment of the pace in here is brilliant, because you let them make that premature move. Now, right there, right? Same thing.
Correct, yes. And now, at that point, it's hard, once again, well, I was thinking more about what happened when I got to the leader at the end, but the moment when Kidding's Joy really had to take out of there is something that is better appreciated with a head-on shot, and it's exactly what I said after the race, is the outrider came and they were interviewing me, because... when you look at the inside was also coming out, but I was certainly making sure that Kidding's Joy, hey, that is my room. I was protecting my territory. I was just, now, it probably visually, it looked worse than it was, the fact that my horse was simultaneously logging in, but I was also taking a hole. Knowing how much I wanted to come in to, again, protect the spot that was somewhat... didn't belong to anybody,
right.
But I knew that Kidding's Joy wanted to go in there. So again, I was just kind of protecting my ground.
And it's funny that I couldn't decide if we should show the clip. The best part of the clip is, well, you look the same. You look the same 17 years later. Graham Motion has aged a little bit. Graham looks so fresh-faced in the video. He's standing behind you as Mike Battaglia is interviewing. But I thought of that this morning, and obviously Better Talk Now stays up. But I also thought about a little Mike and the fact that you won, you know, two of the Breeders' Cup turfs. And I realized that you beat Johnny both times on favorites. Johnny was second in both of those at short prices, in fact. I knew that the Better Talk Now had, when I went and looked on the video, I said, there was something that Ramon could you know share with us. Simultaneously, as we talk about the crop in general, the 360 that you developed.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's easy for industry spokespeople to say, you know, this is a different kind of an implement. It's not like the old rigid sticks. Even the leather popper, even that is gone. This stick is, you know, really gentle and kind on the horses. But how do we go forward from where we are right now, Ramon, in your mind, in terms of letting the public understand that the use of the crop is a tool, it's an implement, it's not punishment per se, and it certainly is not punishment in the sense that that stick will not leave a mark. It's strictly just just the way a horse can feel a fly on its hindquarters. This is the same kind of thing. It's a brush to get them to do something, basically, you know, to help them along, including this case yesterday, where it seems like Pratt was hoping, I mean, normally would have been prompting for a lead change.
Yes, and I believe that this is something that we have two sides here that are equally important. And you talk about educating the public because there is this negative perception and that can be done, but also internally we need to do a better job because we are so all over the place when we talk about any racing jurisdiction and all the different rules that are coming now, that in one place Jersey is extremely strict, you can carry but you cannot use it, in other places you can hit X amount of times. So this is going to become impossible for a jockey to really obey these rules as they travel from one track to the other one, because we're people who get used to stuff, and yes, it's just habits that we create due to doing the same thing over and over. So I, of course, can prepare.
The
crop. So basically, even for the people who don't know much about this, what the main aspect of this and the most important is that we replace something that before, or a lot of guys are using still, is basically two pieces of material like this. But regardless of how soft this material is, there is always an edge because there is sewing around the edges. That's the current one that people
right.
uses. So with this one being a cylindrical shape, we eliminate those edges. But also there is a lot of shock absorption in that. So there has been studies that conducted that prove that this is the impact is greatly reduced. So, but when we talk about the importance in coming to the table, the key word is being able to compromise between jockeys, all the stakeholders and the industry, and creating a set of rules that really makes sense and that can be applied with everybody being happy about. And certainly that is a little tricky. But when, in my opinion, for example, what is being happening right now in Jersey is as extreme as it gets. I mean, there is really no point to carry a crop that supposedly for safety only. I cannot emphasize enough what I said before, that a lot of the safety situations are not necessarily something that you can see. In fact, when you see a horse bolting to the outside, the crop is not really the tool that is going to solve that. You use your hands and you try to control the horse. So a lot of the times are things that you can just sense when you're riding, you know, a horse is opening up and you have a young horse that doesn't want to go through it, but you belong there. An encouragement with the crop certainly makes a difference sometimes between going through or clipping heels. So this is something that certainly requires an open conversation and everybody coming to the table willing to put their agenda to the side.
Well, and that seems to be the way it's worked when it came to the rules that were adopted in Kentucky, the KHRC, last month. And, you know, one of the frustrations that Johnny and Terry Meeks had was that they felt in New Jersey that they just weren't being given an opportunity to negotiate or to discuss their thoughts and have their input, that, you know, the commission, you know, essentially shut them out of the process. You know, one of the other things that, that people just seemingly don't take the time to understand, I saw a lot of rhetoric about how Monmouth Park did this to themselves. Monmouth Park didn't do anything. Monmouth Park wasn't involved except in having to react to what the New Jersey Racing Commission instituted. It was their, they were motivated to try to eliminate or minimize the use of the crop as part of the general conditions and the environment from 2019 that surrounded the Santa Anita breakdown scenario. And they reacted to that. It wasn't Monmouth Park that up and created these rules. It was foisted on them by the Racing Commission the same way that other racing officials determine the rules and engage everybody involved, all stakeholders. So this wasn't a Monmouth Park initiative. It came from the Racing Commission. It will be nice, or it would be nice. I know some people think that perhaps HISA, this Horse Racing Integrity Act ruling body, might have a say. Safety is going to be in their purview. Maybe they can somehow bring everybody to the same, to the same level when it comes to uniform rules. I mean, uniform rule adoption has been basically dogging the industry for, for years. That's been one of the real issues that just never seems to go away. So interesting. I knew that, with the work that you've already put in creating this, how many riders, what percentage of riding colonies nationwide or and worldwide even are using this?
It is a small percentage. I mean, here in Saratoga, for example, I'll tell you, Javier Castellano has used it from day one. That's all he uses. Manny Franco uses it. Eric Cancel, Junior Alvarado, Dylan Davis, a few of the other guys. But it's something that at this point it is optional, so therefore we all gravitate towards what we are used to. I do want to say that I agree, Steve, with your thoughts on what you said about Jersey and what Johnny Velasquez and Terry Mee said. And in fact, when this all started happening, they were talking about creating a rule. I actually reached out and tried to be present in these meetings. And I was denied. They said that if I wanted to, there was this 45 days period of
comment period.
Public comment. But even the stewards, as I reached out to them, they were also somewhat frustrated. They didn't have any part on this rulemaking. And the last thing I want to say is you said that this came about from all the unfortunate breakdowns of the injuries that are happening in California. And I understand that there was a need for the industry to react. And certainly there is always a lot of work being done to improve in so many different ways when it comes to safety. But I feel like that this was an excuse that was created, that we wanted to blame the riding crop for the breakdown. The riding crop had nothing to do with the breakdown. So that's something that certainly needs to be told. People believe that sometimes a horse can be injured. Yes, if you continue to encourage the horse, and by encouragement, it doesn't have to be the crop. It can be by hand riding a horse that is not safe. Of course, that is going to lead to a bad situation. But the horse gets injured, unfortunately, because there is soundness issues or many different other things. But it's not necessarily because of the use of the crop.
Before we go, we're going to take a break. Before we do that, though, I do want to let Ramon also take a moment to talk about the Spanish language efforts. And this is an area, Ramon, that I think the industry has not been given enough credit for years. I've said, why are we not utilizing Spanish language, whether it's broadcasts, whether it's promotions, whether it's merchandising the Latin community? We've got a overwhelming percentage of participation, and not just on the riding side, not just on the training side, not just on the backstretch community side, ownership, breeding, the whole Southern Hemisphere, South America. We've got an outstanding outreach. We you know, have horses on a daily basis that were bred in Chile and Argentina and Brazil, Mexico, etc. It always amazed me that we were not doing seemingly anything to bring, you know, to bring that portion to the racetrack and to basically merchandise riders as stars, as personalities. It's crazy. Every other, you know, you think about what baseball's done, that should have been a template, and it does seem like there's been some advances on that front, and you're part of it.
Thank you. Yes, and I'm excited. I couldn't agree with you more about this. And so we created a platform called Exacta Box, and I say we, my friend Jose Francisco Rivera, who has been part of horse racing, he's like me from Venezuela. He was a race caller. He worked for ESPN Sports for 11 years as an anchor, play-by-play in sports. And so this is something that we thought that it was something certainly needed. It is amazing, Steve, when you think about whether it is New York, Florida, California, any state, the amount of horse racing fans are Spanish-speaking. So there hasn't been a product provided to them that is something appealing because, hey, this is racing. So there are so many awesome stories that need to be told about the sport in a... And you touched on the importance of really elevating the jockeys and making them the main athlete. This is an issue that we have spoken for quite some time, that it is horse racing. We love our horses. They are the star. But at the same time, when it comes to promoting the sport, nowadays especially, a great horse come along, and they will be lucky they make it to race as a four-year-old before they go to be a stud or they retire as a broomer. So for the new fans, especially the kids, it's hard to fall in love with the horse because they will be gone quick. The jockeys will be much longer, and so that's something that certainly we need to do, but also promoting the good stories, something like what you guys do, whether it is in English and Spanish. So I'm certainly happy to be contributing to the sport and looking forward to continue to expand on this platform.
I love it, and an absolute delight always to get a chance to sit with Ramon Dominguez. And Ramon, I appreciate the visit, as everybody that knows how much you've so seamlessly moved, since having to retire. No rider likes having retirement decided for them, but really it's been a gain in so many different areas, including when it comes to the racetrack chaplaincy. Tomorrow at the Humphrey Finney, the Racetrack Chaplaincy Champions Talk. Visit, enjoy, meet Ramon, Angel Cordero, Lafitte, Pinkai Jr., Georgie Velasquez, Rich Migliori, Chris McCarron, Tom Durkin is going to moderate it. And Ramon, I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Ramon Dominguez and the 360 crop and so much more. We'll take a break here, probably our only of the morning. And when we come back, we've got the visit with Seth Merrow is going to visit. Seth will join the set when we come back. Loose on the Lead from the backstretch at Saratoga. 10% of the way into the meet. Off the turf today, by the way, if you have not heard. We've kind of rained almost seemingly all night. But knock on wood, we've dodged the raindrops and we've dodged off the turf. I think we just had, the one yesterday, the fourth, but otherwise pretty good. Back after this, and we'll start to look at what's gone on here the first 3 days of the meet.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Bridgestone is an outside.
Good morning and welcome back to Loose on the Lead in a humiliating experience where people are knocking on my door this morning. I'm a two-alarm guy, and I use old cell phones to do it. One of them was completely dead, and I don't know if the other one didn't go off. And apologies to the audience and everybody involved, certainly my partner on the previous show. Very embarrassing. But there was not a late night last night. I went to Public House, had dinner. Ed Stanko was in the next booth, talked a little Princess of Selmar. And went home, did a little work, went to bed, and so again, apologies after many years. But here we are. But I knew as this all folded up, and I was driving in, I knew things were in able hands with you.
Other than having spent a good 45 minutes wondering, wondering where we were going to, have the. The memorial service. Honest to God, this one.
It's day four.
It's boy, oh boy, oh boy. This was a little unnerving. Thanks to Paul Matisse, who really is the only person I know in Ballston Spa. And I texted him and said, "How close do you live to this address?" And he's like, 2 minutes. I said, we need a welfare check on Mr. Summer Casual over here. And. I don't know what to say.
I don't know what to say either.
And it's been a frantic morning because I have to every year, the first show of our season, Loose on the Lead, I got to go find my IFB, right? So the IFB, and I'm looking, and there was good news and there was bad news. The bad news was I couldn't find the IFB. So at some point, there's going to be there'll be like a treasure trove of them, and I'll find about six of them. The good news, though, I found my BlackBerry. Maybe you should use this. Maybe I should get this charged again. I'll see if I can find the charger, and this could be your third alarm clock. But my BlackBerry.
Did you find your Apple One computer?
Commodore. I've got those. I've got those stacked up. Well, so, but how about look at that, huh?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. I'm looking through boxes of stuff, BlackBerry. I thought...
you're raring to go.
I went one for two. We've apparently got Dave O'Rourke now. You've really set an absolute tone.
What do we do?
Do we set him up while we're on the air, or do we...
Yeah, we'll go to a break.
We just came from a break.
Well...
But he's here now.
So. Yeah, but he's here now.
Wow. We'll be back with... Dave O'Rourke After this, at the races, I should have said that's just like you with Handicappers Report when you do a Racing Across America. Back after this, Dave O'Rourke joins us.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
I'm Seth Merrill, and as Serious Horse Players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers, no one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTB. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a Serious Horse Player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTB.
Winning starts here.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead, the first Sunday morning here for Loose on the Lead. Happy to be here, but more happy to have Dave O'Rourke, President and CEO of the New York Racing Association, because it's been obviously a big weekend for NYRA. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you on board, and always like to have you at the beginning of the meet to kind of kick things off and set the stage a little bit. And the stage certainly was looking good the last 3 days. I said a minute ago, I was out to dinner last night and ran into Ed Stanko, of course, won the Alabama a few years ago. Princess of Silmar, and he had a big smile on his face and said, walking around the facility, it was just great to be back. And give me your reaction. And I saw you all 3 days walking around the facility. And I said, I don't know whether I've ever seen that many people that all had the same emotion and attitude. It just seemed like 3 days where it was a fun, great atmosphere all around. What was your takeaway from the first 3 days?
It's great. It's great to have everyone back. Yesterday I was probably smiling because we got the rain. We got through
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
We kept the guard together. But, it's pretty quickly, it feels normal again.
Yeah.
It took a long time to get used to wearing a mask. It's not taking that long to get used to having Saratoga back. So, we're happy. was a great first weekend, and we're looking forward to the rest of the meet.
Go back to Belmont a little bit, because Belmont Stakes Day, you got a little bit of a crowd there and kind of got used to how it was going to work out. And then it was a week and a half or so later where the governor changed the rules a little bit. And I've talked to people up here who couldn't wait for Saratoga, so they went down and took advantage of Belmont, and they said, boy, it was great to be back there with fans and watching the simulcast signal and seeing the folks out in the paddock and whatnot. It looked like pretty normally once the gates opened up, people were raring to go.
Yeah, so Belmont acted a little bit as the warm-up for Saratoga. The guidance was changing a lot during the spring, and as we've heard a lot, it's difficult to recruit and prepare operationally. So we left the Belmont at, it was a light crowd in terms of numbers. It was just under 12,000, but it was really good for our ops team and our hospitality folks to kind of get a nice, dry run in.
Get back in the groove.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, I've wondered about that, and I talked to people in, the 3 months up to the meet, and people obviously see me and recognize me, hey, what's it going to be like? I said, I'll give you an idea, but tomorrow it could be completely different. And I think it was a moving target. So as you guys went through the spring, were there just all kinds of contingencies for how it may play out?
So then the one right prior was, we'll have a few sections that'll be for unvaccinated folks. So the pivot to 100% was pretty easy. A big focus was to get the backyard open. And that was a challenge. It wasn't really clear until maybe a month out that we really knew what we could do. And we couldn't be happier. I mean, I think everyone couldn't be any happier in the way that it's going right now.
Yeah, it's certainly, as they say, there were lots of smiles. People ready to get back and roaring to go. So give me your impression of the first 3 days. And just how it's gone logistically.
I'd like to say the plant. Always when we open up here, the first few days, there's kinks in the ops. Because you change things. And I think by yesterday, everything was running really smooth. And, we're ready to go. I mean, everything's... the racing's been really strong.
Yeah.
We're on national TV yesterday, which is a big one. I don't think that's ever happened in the first weekend. And there's a lot of great races to come and a lot of good stories to evolve.
I also, I had Pat McKinnon yesterday, hit on this a little bit with him, but I want to get your perspective as well. I went down to the top of the stretch yesterday, or a couple of days ago, took some pictures of the verandas at the top of the stretch. That's a new facility, that tailgate on the turn. I think people are going to really get into that, where the picnic tables are outside the first turn if people haven't seen that. We're showing the stretch now, which that part of the plant was a great way to use an underutilized part of the facility. My hats went off to you guys for this idea a while ago, but that's been expanded now. Talk a little bit about how you guys are making these decisions and kind of upgrading for the 21st century, but still clearly maintaining the charm of what Saratoga is and was.
Yeah, so in the building, you know, where the stretch is, and if you might have noticed there's some concession stands that were redone. It's kind of a slow evolution, but keeping the charm. Obviously, everything's historical in nature, and letting the customer kind of lead on how we expand. So I think you'll see some further refinement in the grandstand, especially around the concessions, just cleaning things up, a bathroom a year. Those right there that they're showing, the spa verandas, that was really cool. Like, that's our hospitality group. There was a demand for it. We had Carol's there, but there was no cover. So this just kind of upgraded the experience and allows people to spend the whole day there comfortably.
Yeah.
And get out of the sun. Yeah. Depending on the weather, it could be raining. And then the tailgate on the turn was Glenn Kozak, our facilities. It was purely his idea, and it was a spot that really wasn't being utilized at all. And I need to walk down there during the day to really see how it's functioning. But I can't imagine that's going to pick up over time. It's kind of like a little unique thing somebody would want to
I think that's exactly true. I think people are kind of unaware, and as more people go and spread the word, because if folks haven't ever been on that first turn, it's a really unique way to watch the race. When I leave here every afternoon, head back over to the front side, I go right by there, and I've watched plenty of races from there. It's a unique perspective. I think people will really take off and enjoy that. But again, you've done a great job in kind of upgrading the flooring up in the clubhouse section. That looks... I'm not sure when
that was going to happen last year, and it was for the box area.
There
it was just, I guess you'd say, restoring it to a certain degree. So sand the floors.
Oh, it looks great.
You didn't want to change anything.
Yeah.
But we wanted to put the tablets, which we'd started at the stretch, in the boxes, and at the same time, really just clean everything up. And that might be the last time that floor could be sanded.
Oh, well, it looks great.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. I mean,
it looks like it's brand new.
It's almost like a veneer now because it's so thin, it's so old. But it does look good.
And I'll give my thumbs up to one other thing, and I'll hand it over to Steve. The paddock tent, which I think served its purpose for a number of years, and if folks don't remember,
what was the purpose, to agitate people?
Well, it did a great job at that. It was terrific at aggravating people.
And it offered a certain group of people, but that how it was utilized is now covered by some of these new facilities.
It was.
And so taking that out adds that kind of prime space, particularly for the newer people, and if they want to bring some kids in and they can look at the horses outside the paddock. So I think that was a good move, too, to expand some space around the paddock.
Yeah, I mean, the tent itself, if you just stand back from it, it was an interesting idea, the location. It never really worked correctly. It was air-conditioned, but it was loud.
Yeah. Oh.
The hospitality had to come from the building. So it was never a Class A experience. And at the same time, it's taking away the public's public area around the paddock. So for years, there's been a push and pull. And finally, with these other amenities that we brought on, it was time to just get rid of it.
Yeah, and as I say, it was a great move because I talk to people who kind of sit in that area in and around and have for years. And so as I walk into the paddock, I see familiar people every year and talk, and they thought that was great to kind of take that out and add some space. And as I say, that's a great way to bring new fans into the game, too. People who only come over during Saratoga and kind of get developed. You're up close and personal with the horses when you're over there. So, yeah, it's a great idea. Steve?
One thing we didn't get a chance, Dave was with me on radio on opening day, and one topic that, you could only speculate on until the gates open, until the gates, are sprung and the horses run, is the numbers. And I don't know how it's going to be possible to sustain this kind of momentum. But opening day, 23 million. Yesterday, 32 million. Mm-hmm. The number that was got to be stunning to everybody was the 21 million on Friday. That was the one that was really, I thought, amazing, because
really? The 32 I thought was big yesterday.
No, 32 was mammoth yesterday.
The 30 million
barrier, absolutely on a non-Traverse Saturday. But one thing that I think is really going to be fun to track for those that are intrigued by these numbers, the on track 12.2 million in these 3 days with 75,000 through the turnstiles basically. That's $162 per head, which is a good number. Years ago, it's between 100 and 200.
The per cap, so we use the per caps in that sense for the F&B. But for the wagering, that on-track number includes Naira bets. So it's really about the licensee. So these numbers are, especially with the way the distribution's changing, with the ADWs. Those numbers, you can't really do the math like that, for lack of a better way.
Anymore. The way
it doesn't necessarily mean everyone here, and that was the average for everyone here, because people are betting with everyone on the phones. They're betting with Capital OTB. Yeah. They could be betting with TVG or Twin Spires.
Absolutely.
And that's not necessarily cash going through the window, as that number historically.
Does the mutual department still break that out?
We can break that out, yes. Yes, we do. We can, and that's how they allocate clerks. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but it's obviously the on track, that historical number you're referring to, is getting smaller every year, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. People focus on that number a lot because that the on track handle had the greatest return to the track,
exactly.
And it still does.
Exactly.
And Naira bets still does have the greatest return back to the purse account and the racing facility itself. But as the interesting thing about these numbers are, what we understand, last year was an anomaly, so you really should use 2019 for comparisons. But it feels as if the sports betting and just being on television and the culmination of all these pieces is a broader audience. I mean, we're seeing it in our ADW data. Sports betting's kicking up in other states, and the initial concern is, well, will that cannibalize us? I think if we align with it, like what we're doing with Fox Sports, and getting out there, getting in front of the casual player, casual fan, bringing them into our game. And that did happen over COVID. We were the only game for a while. That's sticking, and that's affecting those numbers.
The retention.
And there's upside. As these sports betting platforms mature in these markets, we NYRA, want them to take our content onto their platform and get in front of even a broader customer base and let them experience racing and then bring them into the on-track experience.
On that topic, in fact, where does that stand? Because isn't that a little bit of a football in the legislature? And I saw the comments from Gary Pretlow the other day.
Oh, in New York.
Yeah.
Well, New York, yeah, sports mobile betting will probably be here by the end of the year, roughly. I mean, I'm just guessing on that, but that's probably accurate directionally. And that's fixed odds on pretty much everything but horse racing. So our objective will be to partner with, for lack of a better way of putting it, with a sports book to put the Parimutuel product on there with our New York license. And ideally, that would become an on-track wager, like the numbers you said, on the sports book. And can you imagine what that would do for our distribution? And that's the game plan, really. Leverage our content.
That's a discussion that went back actually to the 10-year deal when Tony Alvarado had Tony on, and we discussed, you know, some of their strategic alliance thinkings.
Yeah, I mean, those guys were, I think, ahead of the curve. Lucky for me.
There you go. I love it. Well, as long, you know, obviously there's certain vagaries that you can't control, and that includes races that come off the turf.
Yeah.
That, although, for instance, today, I haven't had a chance to look at the scratch sheet today, but the racing office only put four turf races on today, sort of in anticipation that we were going to have rain over the weekend, and there was strong MTO participation.
Yeah,
so I think the card won't be shredded.
No, they have coverage for, and you know, yesterday there was a point around 3 o'clock to 3:10 where we pull the MTOs out, and those are the decisions that really affect the wagering on the card, because nobody has time to prepare for it. So we got lucky, and you know, everyone's pretty much prepared that we're going to be off today.
Yeah, it seemed to be.
What's the way you probably handicapped?
Yeah, I kind of could tell. Went to bed, it was raining. Woke up, it was raining. I was like, well, and I'm 15 miles east, but you kind of listen. They play this game outdoors. Nothing to. There's going to be races off the turf, and I've said forever that you know some people throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't. Oh, the card's ruined. No, card's not ruined. Had
box up the MTOs.
Well, you're the king of the MTOs. He's the MTO king, Seth is. But I think back to a day when Captain Candyman Can broke his maiden. And this figures into my wife, into Tina. Tina is a mutual. And I hit back-to-back pick threes for a total of $4,000, including one signer. And the fields had scratched. The fields had scratched to like five and six horses, and had, you know, two off the turf races in the sequence, and pick four, two pick threes, one of the biggest days in my memory, on a single card. And ever since then, because I used to fear off the track, off the turf days too, and ever since then I've said, you know what? And Seth also has taught me about, you know, the MTOs, and Andy Sterling teaches everybody that the public, a lot of times, especially Saturdays and Sundays off the turf when there's big crowds here, they'll misbet. They'll bet the race as if it's still on turf a lot of times. And there's horses that are, you know, that are being misbet.
That's interesting. That, yeah, there's value.
Big time. Yeah. So don't despair.
I'll ask you to maybe set up the rest of the meet a little bit. And I have a list that you guys popped about a week or so ago, kind of going over some of the permanently disabled jockeys awareness. Great, certainly charity that comes up on the 31st, Military Appreciation Day, which is always fun to see the guys in their full, you know, blues and whatnot in the winner's circle after the certain races honoring their particular branch of the military. Of course, on the 28th is Travers Day. A couple of giveaway days, cooler bag and a hoodie coming up. But
yeah,
what should people be looking forward to? And we've kind of alluded to it, but pretty much everything right now that people have expected from Saratoga in the past is back in action this year, including, again, picnic tables out in the backyard.
Yeah, and, you know, people, the fans kind of make the scene. So, yeah. We're kind of we'll have giveaway days, and we tried to pick, two items that had high demand. So I think we got two winners this year. There's permanently disabled jockeys. That's one of the best causes we support, Military Day. And there's always something going on, but it's really, it's about the backyard, the atmosphere that people create as they come in. And hopefully we just get the good weather. It's all about weather here.
It really is all about weather. It's dependent on the weather. Although, with a lot of the new facilities, that takes care of that if people want to come and have a day covered or air-conditioned. We haven't mentioned the 1863, which is now 3 years old.
Year we're operating.
Yeah. And so now that you had a couple of years a year under the belt, how's that worked out?
It's really good.
That is a brand new facility, upgraded this to a 21st century sports facility, but architecturally kept right in with the tradition of the plant.
Yeah, it fits in with the plant, which is nice. The only difference I'd say there is Mazzone now is doing the hospitality. So we have a local company, and the food's excellent.
Wow.
It really is. I'd have to say it's one of the best places to eat at a racetrack in the country, if not the best.
I didn't know that Mazzone was doing it, and wow. And Levy, should mention, Levy Restaurants has taken over.
Yeah, well, they're part of the same group,
yeah.
But that building specifically, Mazzone is doing, and they're doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah, all the reports I've gotten so far, very good. And as I say, there have been smiles coming into the track, smiles going out of the track, so certainly looks like it's going to be a good season. And I'm guessing you're anticipating coming out of Belmont now into these first 3 days, again, depending on the weather. But I'm guessing you're looking forward to it from just a management side, having the fans back, and again, crunching those numbers.
Once we get through the first weekend here, you start to get the momentum. So you never know. You're opening up. It's been over, almost 2 years. And obviously, you can detail into the numbers, but they're strong and directionally. And, the people are coming out. Downtown is beyond busy. So this is shaping up to be exactly what everyone would have hoped. And that's great. And it's great to be here. And we're looking forward to a great summer. And let's keep the momentum flowing through Labor Day.
Yeah, I can tell you, just walking around town the last 3 months, people were ready to go. And then when that rule changed, a month and a half or so ago, and things opened up, people were really starting to get ramped up.
But yeah,
it has been reflected in the last 3 days. Steve, you got anything else?
Pat McKenna is really the key. Pat has made it all happen. He was out in front every single thing we talked about with Pat. Starting in about late February, March, he telegraphed every single thing correctly. He read, he read the way the tea leaves of public relations and the way the state was posturing. He foreshadowed every single thing, and all anybody had to do was be confident in what was being, was being offered out, and it all came to pass.
Because it's new for everyone. Nobody's...
No.
I mean, I haven't come out of a pandemic before. I don't know about you. So Pat and Jeff Canizzo, who used to work with the Breeders, were really on point with the state.
Yep, interactive.
Trying to understand what will the next steps be, because nobody really knew what they would be anticipating and communicating with our customer based on what's going on.
Exactly.
Working with Kevin Quinn, who's head of sales here, because we had to release at some point, what are we going to do?
You have to be prepared for any eventuality.
Yeah, and usually we're doing that, in the first quarter. So there's a lot of pent-up demand, a lot of people, what's going to happen? The business community up here, we stayed in constant contact with the chamber, and everyone was on the same page, and it played out well.
Definitely.
Especially for New York, with the vaccination numbers, that was the key.
We said that the other day.
We're all here walking around
because
feeling like it's 2019, because it's not like that everywhere.
That's for sure.
So
that's for sure.
We should be grateful for everything that we've got and everything that we've done as New Yorkers.
Well, this was one of those scenarios. I'll steal a line from Pat: under promise and over deliver.
Yeah, there's a good way of going.
Including on giveaways, where everybody was deflated. Oh, there's not going to be any giveaways. Oh, but there are.
If we're going to have them, let's have good ones.
That was my cooler bag and a hoodie.
That's an important part of Seth's wardrobe and
it actually was harder to get them this year too.
Supply chain. Yeah.
Of course, how do you get stuff to come over?
Comes
from
China.
Exactly.
All of it, really.
Exactly.
Well, Dave, appreciate the visit.
Thanks.
Because I know it's clearly a very busy time. And congratulations on just getting things back. As I say, talking to people who have been at Belmont, you kind of got right back into it when the rules changed, and I'm sure that kind of set the stage and got some good ideas for coming back up here. All I can say is walking around the facility the last 3 days. You've knocked it out of the park, just getting a reaction of fans. So congratulations
to you
and the team.
Thanks.
Maybe we'll get you in for a halfway point. Certainly want to get you in at the end of the season to get a little bit of a recap, but wanted to do a little preview today, and so we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
I'm going to mention, because we didn't get a chance at the start of the show when we were missing Curly over there, one of our sponsors for the season, Healthnetics, healthnetics.com, CBD oil, made in the U.S., out of this world. Marty McGee turned me onto it. I've got psoriatic arthritis in the hands, and Marty told me about it, and they become sponsors, and guests this year are going to be...
Thank you.
Going to receive samples of...
You got a sore shoulder. Let's see if it works.
Let me know. Let me know how it works.
Bingo, bango.
Healthnetics.com.
Right. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap it up for this edition of Loose on the Lead. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead, Episode 1, Saratoga 2020. Seth Merrill now, and Steve, as you said earlier, I'm sure I'll never live that one down.
No, but, this is a memorable episode. But now, to be fair, I will be gone 2 of the last 3 weeks, but it's scheduled that I'm not going to be here because I'll be at Del Mar Pacific Classic weekend, and then at the NHC in Vegas at Bally's Travers weekend. So those are scheduled.
So which NHC this year delayed because of COVID? Normally that would be a February.
It's going to be very
different.
You do a
great job out there, too. Tell people if you have never tuned in, I've said this about 1,000 times to you, but I said the first time you headed out there, I said, radio for a handicapping tournament? How's that going to work? It is compelling listening, though, as it turns out.
Well, and I just, you know what? About just occurs to me now that you're not going to be there either.
No, we can't. Obviously,
you got to be
weekend.
Here.
Yeah,
as far as we
we've
know,
we've gone out the last couple of years. We've gone out as well, and it's fun for us to cover too. I mean, the first year, Matt Valvolgi from down in Albany, who was sitting right in front of us, got made the cut to the
final
next,
table.
And then boom, he gets to the final table. Yeah. So that was a lot of fun to have a local guy we could kind of follow along the year we were out there.
It was also a local guy, Paul Matisse, who came and did the welfare check on you this morning as well. We had the NHC champion. We had NHC champions checking on Seth. That's how much. That's how highly we all value.
He did not have the big check with him, though. I thought maybe he'd carry that.
You love those. He loves those. He's waiting for Ed McMahon. You're going to be waiting a long time to show up
for Ed.
Exactly. You know, one thing though is, you know, despite the fact that you came in here, one thing that is very, very similar that I do notice is that only one of your two buttons is buttoned on the collar, which is not unusual. Even if he has the full morning, he might come in like that.
And that's one of my things I really check on, too, to tell you the truth.
Couple of things, because we don't have a lot, and we didn't get a chance to go through anything. I thought it was very interesting so far, 3 days, 31 races, right? How many different trainers have won races?
I'm going to say out of 31... maybe 19?
25!
Oh, wow.
25 different trainers. Only Steve Asmussen with multiple winners. Four. Jimmy Bond had those two wins, including the Forbidden Apple on the front end.
Oh, Rinaldi looked great.
With Rinaldi ran a terrific race. I kind of botched that. I discounted him. Brad Cox has got two. Kelly Breen has got two. Otherwise, 25 different, you know, basically 21 other different trainers have wins. That's different from the Jockey Colony, where only 11 riders have got wins. Luis Saez is tremendous. He's had mounts in 29 of the 31 races. Irad has had 30 mounts in 31 races. He and Jose have 5 wins apiece. Johnny's winless. Johnny off to a slow start in terms of wins. In terms of some other news and notes, what else do I have?
Well, I'll just quickly hit on some of the stakes winners. We mentioned Rinaldi, who looked really good the other day in the Forbidden Apple. Yesterday, Witt certainly looked very good in that nice full field. Sanford.
Second time now, he's broken slow.
Well,
both starts.
And,
this is a, you know, this is a topic that is really a little odd. I'll have Todd Pletcher, I'm sure, on radio this week. Those Pletcher runners just aren't breaking. I asked Javier Castellano a little bit about this. Here's Witt circling the field and winning off by himself in the Sanford.
And as I say, looking very good doing it, obviously.
I'm going to mention one thing. Watch this. How many more times? One. There's already been two, three, four. What was Irad? What was the need with a widening lead to be giving the horse reminders? In this environment where we're already under the gun and we're having these conversations, Joel Rosario yesterday, if you missed the Joel show, Rosario, hands and legs, no stick. He barely uses a stick anyway. He wins 3 stakes at Monmouth yesterday, including with Graceful Princess. Kind of missed that $30 winner. He also won on Great Island. He won the Matchmaker with Chad, and he also won with Dr. Post. And sort of, I can't get Dr. Post right. I'm on and off with Dr. Post. Anyway, Rosario, the 3 wins. We talked earlier about the Haskell result, and we'll see what it all means for the Travers down the road. Chad also Tribhuvan, wire to wire in the United Nations, which was projectable. How about the situation with Godolphin? Again, the 1-2, this time Althika for Charlie Appleby. Manny Franco, his 14th grade one win of his career.
Charlie Appleby, 1-2, obviously, as well, coming over here. And then going back to opening day, Pretty Birdie. It's just fun to see the Mary Lou Silks back in the winner's
circle. That was amazing.
For Norm Cassie, that was nice. And Golden Pal, I had Wesley Ward on. Golden Pal looking very good, and obviously he has very high hopes for that one going forward. So, yeah, some nice stakes results so far in the meet, and I would expect that to continue on because I said earlier it was a shame people didn't see some of the great performances last year, but I think some of the divisions are shaping up, so we will see. I just read a couple days ago, Latruska still has a race up here, possibly in her sight. She would be great to see come up here. Essential Quality just worked the other day. So we're going to see some of the leaders in the divisions, obviously, as you do at Saratoga. And so I expect more great performances going forward.
One division leader that is going to be sidelined, if you hadn't seen it, Mystic Guide, yeah, with a knee chip surgery. Dr. Bramlage is going to do it. And Godolphin loses one of their big cogs. But they've got Brendan Walsh has got what's his name?
Maxfield.
Maxfield to sort of pick up the slack, but Mystic Guide, it's minor, but they're going to be hard pressed. I mean, it's typically that's a 90-day thing, 75 to 90 days. What do you do? Then they'll make a decision about bringing him back next year or sending him, to set him up as a stallion. So Mystic Guide on the sidelines.
Yeah, and you mentioned it before, but Mandaloon kind of with a crazy career now with the potential sitting out there to get moved up into two Grade 1 victories. If he got moved up in the Breeders' Cup Classic, would he still be the horse of the year? At that point, that is a complete speculation. That's not even a speculation, that's an imagined situation.
The whole situation is difficult. If you missed the earlier conversation we had with Ramon, we pulled up the tape. I don't know if anybody, Brian, I don't know that little snippet that I sent you. I don't know if you can run that, but Ramon made that with some editing tools, and it's actually very revealing. There's a lot more to that incident yesterday in the Haskell. There's a lot of moving parts to that. And to just summarily say that it was all Flavian Pratt is unfair because Mandaloon actually contributed. Mandaloon comes in. Paco contributed by being Paco and doing Paco things. It wasn't just that he couldn't use the stick. And frankly, they can use the stick. Nothing says that you can't go to the crop if it can help you in a safety issue. Certainly that was an eligible scenario. So people saying, oh, that he couldn't use the stick, he could have, and then deal with the ramifications later. I did not hear, by the way, Friday I did the show from Haskell, from Monmouth on Friday, had not heard about the outcome of Carlos Montalvo's hearing with the stewards in New Jersey about his race last Sunday, the first race, where he absolutely used the stick repeatedly on the eventual winner who was bearing out. And he explained, and his jock agent explained, that, you know, he did it for safety reasons. So this is not a simple, these things are never simple, frankly.
Oh, yeah,
the DQ was the right call, but it doesn't mean that Flavian Pratt was egregious in this scenario. And I think everybody should always, you know, really try to look at these from every angle. It's one reason why, you know, I never get too high or too low on DQs or non-DQ calls. And I was taken down out of a $20,000 pick six at Del Mar on a DQ that was a 50-50 call. I've been on the losing end of real money in that scenario. I think it's one of those things that when they come do a welfare check on you and you don't answer the door, you just hope that you got one more decision from the stewards than you lost.
And on that note, we will wrap it up for this week. Great to be back.
Yeah, it was great to be back. Believe me, I was verklempt.
Well, again, apologies to the audience.
The audience barely missed you. It was me that was upset. What am I going to do?
I didn't ask you, though. I didn't get a chance. How was Monmouth yesterday?
Well, they're 20,000, and it was lovely. They got very lucky with the weather themselves. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, it could have been, they expected thunderstorms. knock on wood, everybody's done okay on that front.
All right, we will wrap it up for this edition of Loose on the Lead. Seth Merrill, Steve Bick. This wraps up the abbreviated week number one, so we'll be back here in the morning on Wednesday with handicapper support and more racing across America, so we look forward to seeing you then. Obviously, enjoy all the racing this afternoon as well, and I'm just checking here.
You got a push? I waited. I really did not do any serious work knowing that conditions were going to be up in the air.
And that's probably a good point.
I will say one thing, though. You know, yesterday I tried to make the David Donk Golden Door, but I again am going to stress that point because you had it. Did you see the numbers yesterday?
Yeah.
In that fourth race? The state-bred turf routes, particularly, full fields, wildly competitive. I got a nice email from somebody who found the winner, Maddie's, what was Maddie's last name? Maddie's Express, yesterday at a nice price. If I had known that horse was going to go 10-1, was 6-1 morning line, but floated up. That was my second choice in there. Take extra time looking at those state-bred turf routes. There's very little separating those horses. There's going to be some that are coming from claiming ranks, you know, 40 non-2s and that kind of thing, and they're open company, and they're moving back against state-breds. There's very little separating those horses. And the ones that are 7-2 are barely better than the ones that are 12-1. And to me, they're my favorite races up here, and they pay off just handsomely. Go look at those figures in the fourth race yesterday. Look at those exotics. They were bonanzas.
And that was my last leg in one of the bankroll plays. I have a pick three bankroll on Saturdays this meet, and that was one of my last plays. And I was rooting for your play today. That was the best. That was going to be a $500-some payoff on the pick three for the bankroll team. And the horse you had in second that won the race,
Maddie's
I didn't use
Express.
That race, but it was just outside my mix. I was kind of kicking myself.
Well, $23 winner, and to give you an idea, the longest shot on the board was beating the neck in here, 54-1. Catch That Party, Maya Engelhart. I don't know how that horse, go back and look. I'm going to go back and look and see. Sure enough, looking at Thoroughgraph, for instance, ran an 11.25 last time. And that put him within a couple of lengths of everybody, 54-1. I'm telling you, 10-horse field that on figs aren't separated by two lengths.
And again, the conditions you're talking about.
State bred, allowance conditions, on the grass going long.
So, yeah.
Start
looking.
Exacta, $483. The Quinella paid $217. The dollar Quinella. The Tri paid $11.90 for 50 cents. The 10 cent Super paid $1,300, and that was with Austrian, the favorite, third, and Grape Nuts Warrior, the second choice, fourth. I'm telling you, this is the one. The state bred allowance long on the grass.
We will be paying attention as the meet goes along. I mentioned the bankroll, the pick three bankroll yesterday that will happen on Saturdays. Today there's a $100 show pool bankroll. I think if you still go to the website, you can still potentially get on that. I will see if I can string five horses together that hit the board and make a little money for people. Today there's also a match bet promotion down at the clubhouse racebook. Keep that in mind. And I'll also toss up out if you're coming up to the track, because people have asked me about it because they know I'm a fan. Low Rollers up here kicks off today. They'll do Low Rollers up here every Thursday and Sunday. They didn't do it opening day, obviously, but Low Rollers will kick off up here and have some fun with that.
Colonial starts, and they're one of our sponsors this season. Colonial kicks off tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. If you have not looked on these dark days, Monday, Tuesday, holy cow. Tomorrow's fields, 14 by 14 by 11 by 7 by 14 by 14 by 10 by 14 by 12 or 13 by 6 in a maiden special hurdle. And then in the other hurdle, maiden special, 10. Unbelievable. Yeah. Huge fields.
I'm guessing familiar names in there for folks as well. And speaking of the hurdles up here kick off on Wednesday.
The Kaiser, Jonathan Kaiser Memorial on Wednesday, and the 8P Smithwick and Clancy River D, Jim Brafaro.
Ah,
Maybe he may go favorite.
All right, because I'm about to go over and take a little piece with the Clancy brothers.
Well, you can you can act like you're in the know.
Now that I've talked to you. Yeah. All right, we'll wrap it up for this Sunday edition of Loose on the Lead. As always, a lot of fun. Hopefully you got some good information for the afternoon. Steve Bick, Seth Merrill. Again, kicking off the season will be every Sunday at 10 a.m.
Healthnetics, that's for you. Healthnetics, okay. my partner. Maybe it'll help you wake up on time.
With the end of the pandemic, there will be those post-basketball nights where I may have to, although the pandemic may have ended my basketball career. We'll wrap it up. Enjoy the racing this afternoon. Again, it's been a fun 3 days, and it's going to continue straight through that next 37 of racing. Thanks for joining us this morning. We will see you next week.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.